Blog Talk Radio.
Well, it's been a while between episodes, hasn't it? Well, at least on Blog Talk. Today, I'm going to be talking to a friend of mine. We're going to be promoting an upcoming book that I have. Well, I've had. It's just some crap I wrote down. I've enjoyed doing it, but you know how it is. But we're going to discuss it, and hopefully I can promote it and get people to maybe give it a chance. Let's see where Matt's at. Another thing coming up is I'll be interviewing Jerry Conway for a third time. You know, Jerry Conway has such a prolific amount of comic book work, it's hard to get everything he's done in 30 minutes. It's just not possible. And at this point, he's actually come back to Marvel, so he's doing he's writing the Carnage comic, which I've really enjoyed. It's done very well. You know, it's done a lot for... It's not something I would think would be easy to write, because Cassidy's not exactly the most likable character, hey, easy to get death to. Hey, Matt, how you doing?
Good, how are you?
I'm all right. I was just draining time talking about the Carnage comic.
I said I wasn't sure what I was calling into there, because I wasn't expecting you talking before I got on.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I didn't want to leave any dead air. Yeah, you can go ahead and start.
Do you have an introduction planned or what?
Not really. It's hard to plan these things. And again, if I'm talking about it myself, it's kind of like, well, here's some crap I wrote down. Yeah, there's a muted chicken fight.
All right, well, I'll just swing something. But it's going to be conversational. That's the main name of the game here. Okay?
Right. Yeah, that's usually how it is. You know, basically just keep conversation going, hoping it's interesting enough for the third party to follow.
Is it just you and me on the line, or is Neil or anyone here too?
It's just me. It's just you and me for now. Neil's not exactly. I don't think Neil's too great at these things necessarily.
No.
I've always got a gag, but you know, I think eventually I'll make money, and then Neil's gonna remember that he worked on it.
So, Victor, you and I are here, and we're going to talk a little bit about your work. We're going to talk about your stories, your creative process. And I think we're mainly going to focus on the Overdog stuff.
Right.
This one. Okay. Yeah, so this is your take on the crazy, madcap world of wrestling with increasing weird tale elements that come in as it connects to the other world that you've created. Sort of stories within stories is the way that you've tackled this. And
it wasn't necessarily.
So
you go ahead and finish.
Sorry if you hear in the background a siren. I'm kind of near a hospital right now, so we might have to do a little bit of editing in here. But let me let this ambulance pass. Sorry about this.
That's okay. You're in Washington. I'd be surprised there wasn't a siren.
That's actually my theme song. I'm coming in.
You know, it's funny that I'm watching these Nitros, and somehow it's like mm-hmm. May of 99, and Scott Steiner's still using the Wolfpack hoodie.
Mm-hmm.
And it's far past the point anybody, the NWO, has been anything resembling a coherent group. You know, so he hasn't switched over to the sirens yet. And then they got Rich Steiner coming out for the Wolfpack theme.
All right, let me continue on. So I think the most pressing and, meaningful thing about your work is how much of yourself you put into it. There are hooks for people where it's serialized. You know, there's not much, wrestling tales out there in a serialized format.
No.
There's very little fiction in general, you know. Most of what's out there is what the company's produced, and I think maybe there's some new comics coming soon and things like that, or if you want to go back to the old WCW comic from the 90s. But there's really not much out
there. That would probably be the closest thing. That would probably be the closest thing, would be like the WCW comic, because wrestling and fiction, if you look at it, it's one of two ways. They'll sometimes talk about it like it's matches, but they rarely will focus on it. You might have something like an outsider coming in, and they've got to fight the champion, and he's real and everything, like maybe a three-stooges short or something. But then you'll have those ones saying, oh, none of it's real, but they can never really focus on what it is. WCW comic had it where, you know, guys are wrestling, they're trying to win belts. Odd things happen, but it still involves wrestling. If you go to 99, when Chaos Comics started doing, like, the Undertaker comics and stuff, and, like, it'd be things like, it's just kind of, I can't really know how to describe them. Like, Steve Austin would be a drifter fighting sheriffs, and somehow we're not going to know he's Stone Cold Steve Austin the Wrestler.
Or you have, like, and Undertaker fighting devils and demons and things.
It's odd to a degree that you're reading it to see them as wrestling. Or I remember when I was a kid, I used to watch Hulk Hogan's Rockin' Wrestling. That was my favorite show. You know, I'd watch it as a kid, and I'd be getting frustrated because I keep thinking, when are they going to start wrestling?
Yeah, I wonder a little what they're going to be doing with the new comics and how they're going to manage that, because they try to make it anything but wrestling, because it's almost like they're embarrassed of the wrestling ties. So that's very different from your work, which you really, it's from a point in time in that sort of late 90s era, which the last boom in some degree, where you have a lot of, pastiches and stand-ins. You take what you've known and you tweak everything a certain amount of degrees to make it original, to look at things a new way. But you still have enough of those elements in there that people can sort of recognize what you're examining.
It's funny. I've actually come across doing some of these recently because I've been having to read this. I'm getting it ready to put into an ebook, and I can't remember who some of these guys' analogs are. I had an idea.
I think some of them didn't
have
any. I think, you just needed someone thematically to fill a role.
Yeah, but I wanted to definitely focus on wrestling because the initial idea came to me when I was watching some ECW fan cam shows, and people that don't know, ECW is a unique wrestling promotion in the fact that they filmed almost every show they ever did. They are missing like one or two shows, and I think that's because Heyman was afraid they were going to get sued. So the tape would mysteriously disappear. And I remember I'd be watching a guy like Mikey Whipwreck get his brain beaten every night. And I kind of wondered, what would life be like if you were a wrestler, you're just fighting. And I always wonder, someone calling their wife and saying, yeah, I had Taz. I hit him with the flying dropkick. No, he choked me out.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's important to people know that it takes it as a case. Kayfabe, people who listen to this probably will know what that means. But it takes it as if the text was real, if it was, you take this outlandish world of pro wrestling, which, we know is obviously a work, and you take it to its logical conclusions. You fill in those gaps in logic that exist on what if there wasn't the cooperation, and those gaps, I think, were in there pretty severely in the 90s. If you go back to decades previous, they're not in there quite as much.
Right.
But
there's
enough things taken for granted in the 90s that you do have to sort of fill in those gaps and put in logical connection points in order for the whole thing to stand up on its own.
Yeah, and it's one of those things, because they would do these things, and it was just, and, I mean, it still bugs the piss out of me, but at this point, there's not really much that can be done. But, like, they would do stuff, and it really got bad in late 99 when Vince Russo took over WCW, and they'd be saying, well, the guys that write this show, and I'm like, well, what show's being written? When are we going to see that show? You know what? Do you understand what I mean by that? It's like, when are we going to see the show you're writing? What is the context? Like, WWE would say they were an action, or the WWF say they were an action adventure show. Well, what is your action adventure show about? If I watch Miami Vice, they can tell me what it's about. It's about two cops working undercover in Miami.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so what is the action adventure show about? And I mean, this is just a personal thing that was bugging me. A lot of people learn to ignore it, you know, and they're better off than I am. In that sense, you know, so I would kind of wonder that. Or if you'll remember, do you remember the early 99 when The Undertaker, and they had this weird interview where they said Undertaker was, they believed he was the character, The Undertaker, but he wasn't. And they never mentioned it again because almost immediately after, somebody said, what about Cade?
Mm-hmm. Everything,
you know,
starts to fall apart.
Right, it doesn't. Yeah, because if The Undertaker becomes a character and he's not real, then what does that make Kane? Because that's his brother.
Mm-hmm.
And that was just some of the things that you've seen in the late 90s, but to me it's interesting if you try to fill those holes in. You know, if you try to find out, you know, how this would actually work, because I was thinking that'd be a more interesting story than the idea that, well, that we're the Muppets and we're putting on a show.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, we've mentioned the fact that you take these familiar characters and you sort of twist them. So, you know, people who are fond and nostalgic for this period can find that. And you also create these logical connection points. You give, you know, an extra level of human realness to a world where they don't always develop that, where they sort of take it for granted instead of developing it. And you took those holes and you filled them in and you sort of developed them. I think both of those things that were really just background to the main story and the emotional journey that your character goes on. And you know, I hope you don't mind me saying this here, but a lot of that, I think, was in most, you know, good writers do this, was you working out things going on in your life in the context of pro wrestling.
Yeah,
which I think is a positive. That gives it real emotional weight.
Yeah, I wasn't necessarily even doing that intentionally at the beginning, but, you know, at the time I was doing things, and one of the things that I would do with Overdog, and again, if you go into it, his timidness, you know, and always trying to be polite in situations where you really shouldn't be polite to the point it's annoying, that's something I actually ended up doing for life. You know, it'd be like, sorry, excuse me.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
there's
and then eventually,
you
know,
Overdog to you and a lot of you to Overdog, though they aren't the same thing by any means. But I think the heart of the character, you drew that from, you know, your own personal ethos, you know, the way that you view the world, the way that you try to view the world, and maybe the person that you try to be to some extent. And you've put him in a very unfair, unforgiving world. It's sort of how, you know, that clashes, and, you know, where his desires crash up against, you know, the fact that maybe even some of the things that he wants aren't readily available in the world that he's in, or maybe they shouldn't be what he wants, or that there's a huge cost to it, and it's not necessarily a fair cost.
Well, looking back on it in hindsight, probably when he was a child watching wrestling, the world had changed greatly by the time he got grown and had an opportunity to become a wrestler.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
the ideal he had
really
looked up to.
If it ever did.
Right, it didn't exist anymore, and even probably the illusion of it didn't. And that was probably about the, you know, and again, and probably the weakest part for me, right, which, I mean, if there's any of us good, I mean, it's probably the weakest part for me when it's just Overdog because I had nobody to play him against.
Mm-hmm.
You know, someone that, that was when I got the idea for Sarge, and the thing with Sarge was I kind of took the opposite, you know that part of your personality when somebody, like, cuts you off in traffic or somebody's just kind of rude to you, you kind of want to punch them? You're not going to, but you want to.
Yep.
You know what I mean by that? Like, you want, there's a part of you that
I
wants
do,
to.
Yeah.
You say, no, don't do that. You'd be a psycho.
That's sort of that part of you that, that wants to push aside civilization and sort of go back to the bestial urges and, you know, just be it. I think that might be
And that was where Sarge came in. And, you know, as somebody that was once, you know, and basically those attitudes had tried taking him nearly to the bottom. You know, and again, it's kind of hard because eventually, you know, and we can get into this, eventually, you know, Sarge went into the, you know, because eventually we dealt with the idea that maybe there was another Sarge in, like, another world. So it kind of comes complicated to figure out if Sarge was ever a good person.
Yeah, and I think what's more interesting maybe in this immediate moment is the intersection between the two characters, because, you know, Sarge had lived through those glory days that Overdog grew up with that, you know, maybe were not real, but he was much more of a hero to him than maybe he, you know, he had been to some degree, but maybe never to the full degree that Overdog saw him in. And then one thing after another, you know, sort of brought him down. And it's him then clashing up against this person who still sees him in this idealized way.
Yeah, and I was doing with that. And, I mean, and honestly, and you know this, I'm not really happy with a lot of things to do, but I'm very happy with the way a lot of this turned out. And the only thing I could say is that it was something that if I found it separately, I would have loved it just because it was just something that I've looked for in different series and I couldn't find it.
And I think it deals with, I mean, for like we began, you know, if you just look at the text, if you, you know, without even the theme necessarily, is that wrestling doesn't usually examine itself so well. As we just discussed, it takes things for granted and you really delve into there. And I think it works as a representation of how much wrestling gave up in the 90s to gain the success that it did. And sort of through the eyes of someone who's idealistic and could see those things that were lost, but not in the sort of way, you know, the bitter old timers that we see now who just complain about it, but someone who came in with a child's eyes. So there's that, which is something I don't think we've ever really seen from an idealistic point of view. And then there's also, of course, the character stuff.
Yeah, well, it's, when you look at it as a backdrop, you know, wrestling in 99, 2000, they really gave up a lot for what turned out to be very little gain.
And it seemed like a lot at the time. You know, it seemed like they were gaining worlds.
Yeah, it was a lot at the time, and the WWF was smart enough, you know, that they went on the stock market. And, I mean, and that's one thing you can credit, at least intelligently, you know, the WWF did. They got a lot of money out of that boom. By the time it was over in 02 or whatever, they could at least look and put their hand on everything they spent money on.
Yep.
But you know, WCW, though, they died for basically nothing.
And yeah, they died so that Eric Bischoff could do reality television.
Yeah, it's like, you know, it did that, you know. And again, it's hard to even look at it now because there's so many different pieces that were going together. I still say that if WCW had kept their ratings up, AOL wouldn't have been able to kill it as easily.
Yeah.
They would at least have to explain to somebody. They'd have to explain why they're getting rid of something that has a 4.0 rating.
Yep. So it was a time where they were sacrificing everything that would have sustained things on a lower level to try to reach for something higher. And it burnt out, you know? So that's the world that he's looking at that in.
Right, and I kind of get to the point, you know, because I finished the Sarge portion of the story, the Savage Sports Stories portion, and again, I was very happy with that. And I would just say that anybody you think is necessarily an analog in the story, that's not what I necessarily think of the person or the or what they were on television. That could just be a perception of what they could have been. If that makes any sense, you know. And again, I don't want to necessarily say who everybody is supposed to be because, again, for all I know, this will make money or something. I'll get food. No, that's kind of wishful thinking.
I mean, you're really looking at it as a moment in time, and you need all those pieces to sort of make it work. Some of them, you know, thematic, and some of them actual analogs.
Yeah, and some of it
you are looking at the history.
Right, and a lot of it comes from what wrestling magazines used to be able to do, because wrestling magazines, if you look at them like in the 80s and even the 70s, they created worlds for fans that could not see these worlds. Like, if you were a fan in where I'm at in Alabama, you know, I didn't know what was going on in New York or the WWWF. They had
to paint
a picture for me if
we're
hosting
a team. It goes back to the name of Savage Sports Stories, too. It's just, you're drawing a lot of things that don't exist anymore. Whether it be the pulps, you know, like with the name, or the after magazines and how they would not just give you shapes of those worlds, but also mix things up. You know, they would give you, what if the Road Warriors, you know, wrestled Demolition years before that actually happened, that sort of thing.
Yeah,
and you have
better.
The freedom to do that sort of experimentation as you do this examination. So.
Yeah, and it was things that, and again, I'm almost done with it. I'm trying to get it formatted for the ebook. I have a friend that's actually been published. He's published a book. I'm not going to say his name because I don't know if he wants me to mention his name or not. But he's going to set it up for me. And again, I'm hoping it turns out well. If it doesn't, well, that's not why I wrote it in the first place. You know, because you don't write things expecting people to read it or whatever. You hope they do, but sometimes you're just hoping you get something on paper or screen or what have you.
If nothing else, it's you're leaving a mark.
That's what I'm hoping to do. You know, and it can be something. And I've got ideals for ways to get this into other media. It's just, it's kind of an unfortunate part of the fact of life. You know, you need some money to do anything.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, people should keep in mind, it's not like you have access to being able to hire, you know, expensive editors or anything like that.
Right. No,
I mean,
it's just me.
From your heart.
Yeah, it's just me. I go through, and if you see typos or something, it's just rest assured, I try my best to get rid of them. It's like I always say, it's kind of like getting the lice out of your hair, you know, you always forget the eggs. You know, just something like that, but I go through it. One thing that if anybody's been following this, and again, I think I was getting like 300 views a day on these stories when I was doing them, or I got 500 a couple of times. Because again, and I stand by doing the blog. If you can get a daily post of a fictional story, I still think it's a good idea. I just didn't have the resources to really promote it. One thing that's going to be near the end is that the Overdog universe of the wrestling will be connected to the Horsepower universe of the a more traditional superhero universe, which even in of itself is a little bit off because
it's really again mixing a bunch of sources, mixing a bunch of inspirations, you know, putting a lot of, I think, yourself in it, and, you know, your trials and tribulations and the emotions that you felt, and drawing them into this work in a way that a lot of them don't exist in the inspirational sources that you have. Just because
they don't.
Those weren't
like
meant for, you know, that sort of an audience.
It's like sometimes, you know, because you know that I'm a big fan of Power Rangers. I mean, I love stuff like that, you know. But sometimes, you know, or if you watch these old Japanese tokusatsu shows, you kind of have to imagine the show they wanted to make.
I think you respect the source material more than they respected it. So they weren't always respecting what they were doing. So, you know, they didn't even tap into the potential of what they had.
So, but that's what I was hoping to do with the Horsepower universe. And again, I would say it's a more traditional superhero universe, but in some ways, it's not. I don't think it's the type of thing you would find in a lot of fiction today. Because one of the things I try to do is I don't mind just doing something stupid or going with a pun name. I really don't. I just soon do a pun name, or I don't mind. Like I was doing the Ransom Fortune story where he's in the mutant cockfighting ring. And I probably used the word cock more times than I should have. You know, but it's kind of like, you know, an old gag, you know, how many times am I going to have this chance?
You're fearless to some degree. You know, the only person that you were really writing for as an audience was yourself and what you knew was good.
Yeah, it would be me and to a lesser extent Neil. If I can upset Neil or amuse him somehow, I usually consider that a victory. You know, so, I mean, but that's what you have to. I'm hoping that when...
A lot of the best fiction is people just trying to write things that they and the people that they care about would consider good instead of searching for, you know, a commercial audience.
Yeah, well, you're going to be disappointed usually if you do that, because a lot of the times you're not going to. I mean, sometimes you can, but I don't think anybody that's ever found commercial success is looking for it.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's like if you were going into something for, I remember years ago I read an interview with the wrestler Booker T, and he was talking about being a wrestler, and he said if you got into wrestling for money, you were going to be sorely disappointed.
Yep.
He said, if all you needed was money, he said, yeah, because he said it would just break your heart every time you look for it. That you need to find some type of satisfaction within doing it, and I think that's true of anything. I don't really have a date pointed out on when this should be ready. It should be on Amazon Kindle. I'm hoping before the year's over.
Mm-hmm.
I made a few mistakes going in, and one of those was I messed up the chapter numbers. And by that I mean is I'm not good at looking at this because, again, I've got to open a notepad. And I don't know exactly how many pages are each for the chapters. And when I was doing it serialized, it was fine because I'd go 1, 2, 3, 4, and it wouldn't matter if it was 2 paragraphs. But doing it like this, I have to make sure, you know, that it actually looks like real chapters.
So you'll work it out. It just might take you a little bit longer.
Yeah, it's just it's more monotonous than it is difficult.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's kind of the worst type of work. When you're just having to go something, you know, you're going, okay, sort, okay, that'll be 2. So I'll have that, but hopefully it'll be done because I have new cover art ready for it, and there is like, and for anybody that's actually following it, there is more horsepower and the Cosmic Forces universe done. It's just I haven't finished the stories, and I don't put them up until I have everything done.
Mm-hmm. All right, so
if
I'll look forward to that. I'll look forward to reading it again, I'm sure, in the new format.
Yeah, that's hopefully what I'm going to do, and hopefully I'll have more horsepower. Will be if this does reasonably well, I'll have Horsepower Season 1 and Cosmic Forces ready to put into a book, into a Kindle book, and that'll be done. And mm-hmm. I have new stuff that nobody's read. There's Overdog stuff that hasn't been read by anyone but you, probably.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was going to explore 2008, and I never got around to finishing it because I just found that era so uninteresting. And I don't mean to make that sound like I'm crapping on that era because, you know, there's good wrestling then, you know, there's good wrestling now if you know where to look. It's just sometimes mm-hmm. I feel like in some ways that a lot of the magic was killed by the late 2000s.
Yeah, no, I agree with you on that. I think a lot of us got out of it at that time for at least a little while. So
the
character, when you look at what came right after that, being the rise of Daniel Bryan.
Yeah.
He's that same kind of underdog story. You know, I think there are elements that, you know, that resonate between the two, even though you wrote it independent of that.
Yeah, and I'll also say that my character, Bleached Evil, bears a great deal of resemblance in the way he speaks to Bray Wyatt, even though Bray Wyatt showed mm-hmm. up a year later.
And I think it has a lot to do with, you know, being an archetype, being that you hit something that was kind of primal with that character, and then it made sense that they hit for it too.
Yeah, it's not necessarily because, I seriously doubt. The only way I would have think somebody would have saw my shit would be if, because I remember they said CM Punk was working on the forum. you remember that, don't you? They said CM Punk was working on the forum.
Yeah, but he'd be probably the last one to give that sort of feedback.
Yeah, so that, but again, I seriously doubt it. But a lot of times, you know, if you come up with a decent idea, somebody else came up with it, or maybe we both came up with a bad idea. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but it's not too uncommon for people to come up like Jerry Seinfeld came up with the joke that I had years ago, and you know, I seriously mm-hmm. doubt that he was coming around what 12-year-old me was thinking.
Yeah, there's only so many original thoughts in the world, which is actually one thing that your story has going for it is the fact that you do really touch on ground that just hasn't been covered that much.
Right. You, that's the main thing you do. You try to find things that other people haven't. Okay, Matt, thank you mm-hmm. for talking to me. They're about
to
cut us off.
Yeah. All right. Talk
all
to
right.
You later.
Well, I'll get back to you later. And everybody, try to support it if you can.